You son of a bitch. Not only do you put this gig into play without talking to me, but you get yourself in a money deal with Corsini that's going to get your ass killed. I don't believe you gave him. And don't think I don't know why you did it. I know, all right. You think good old Roy's going to jump on his horse and save your scheming ass? You think I won't tell you to go straight to hell, eh? Well, you got a big surprise coming your way, mister. Big surprise. Pick me up at 8.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hey, do you know Mac Daddy make you jump? Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Fascinated with Films.
That's good, because I had a joke, but I forgot
it. Oh, that's trash. How you been, man? It's been a bit.
Yeah, doing good, man. Yeah. Life is going all right.
You're on more of the upswing than the downswing?
As always, yeah. Brother. I stay on the upswing.
Upswing is great. You know, we've been hanging out for an hour, and I didn't mention, and I'll mention it on the pod. We just booked our anniversary trip, and we were thinking of different places, and we were like, fuck it. You know what we really want to do if we can have our choice anywhere? We're going back to Iceland.
Nice.
So we are going back to Iceland.
Very cool, dude.
Already booked one of our excursions, which is the snorkeling between the tectonic plates.
Oh, wow.
Type of thing. That was one of the things we didn't get to do the first time we went.
So I recently saw a series that was filmed in Iceland.
Really?
Yeah.
What series?
It takes place in Alaska, though.
Oh, I know the series. Ugh, I know the series. Dude. I didn't know you had watched it.
Well, I watched it all the way through.
Man, have you watched it? So you were talking to True Detective.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Dude, it was amazing.
I love her, man. I love fucking Jodie Foster. I love old Jodie Foster.
Yeah, she's good.
She's really, really good, and I love that series. It could have ended a little bit stronger, in my opinion. It would have been better as a pretty decent one. We just finished a series too, called "The Apple Never Falls."
And, it sounds familiar.
It's the same person that wrote "Big Little Lies," which was the that Reese Witherspoon HBO series with Nicole Kidman was in it, Shailene Woodley. It was decent. It was a good kind of two seasons. This one was decent. It was good. It also didn't have as poignant as a punch as you thought it was going to be at the end, but it was had like Gone Girl vibes, mm-hmm. where Annette Bening disappeared at the very beginning of the series, and all the fingers are pointing to Sam Neill, killing her, and it's all her kids are like turning on the dad. Did he do it? Did he not do it? Where's mom? And it's the whole and it was a mini series, so you didn't have to wait for a second season. So it was like 7 episodes, and it was good. You got to see Sam Neill's looking fabulous, man.
Is he?
Oh, man. He looks like he just stepped off of like Jurassic Park's Jeep right there.
That's awesome.
He's just got that old man's beard, and he aged real well, like some of the like Goldblum, I guess. Maybe it's the Jurassic Park. They all went to that fucking island, man.
I will say with the True Detectives, I feel like we wanted it to end on more of a, and I'm not going to use the term, more on one note.
Yeah.
Than the actual note that it ended on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the actual note was super satisfying.
It
too.
Was good. I wanted it to even be crazier. Not ruining anything. The strongest part of the whole series for me was finding the formation of these bodies that were all frozen together.
Yeah.
Kind of in these rictus like I wanted it to be like Event Horizon.
Yeah,
I think I wanted it to be Event Horizon, and it wasn't quite as Event Horizon as I wanted it to be.
Yeah, that perfectly put.
There was something else similar to that, too. We watched, I haven't watched many new things. I've been rewatching a whole bunch of stuff, and I can talk a couple of those, too. But we checked out that Poor Things. I didn't mention it on the pod before.
I've heard of it. She won the Academy.
That was the one with Emma Stone, won the award, and it looked weird. If you watched the trailer, she's like a robot or it's like a person that's being rebuilt.
Like AI.
Willem Dafoe built her from like almost like a Frankenstein or an Edward Scissorhands element, but she's not all the boxes have not been checked off, so she's kind of crude and weird and stuff. And when I watched the trailer, I was like, man, this could be a fun, like, we don't have Tim Burton back quite yet because Beetlejuice is still kind of
the trailer looks good.
It did. And it's got me stoked for Tim Burton, so I was excited with this Poor Things. But when I'm watching it, I'm like, this is not Tim Burton. This is Terry Gilliam.
Huh.
And Terry Gilliam is weird, man.
Yeah.
Like 12 Monkeys or all the Monty Python type stuff.
Yeah.
Even Brazil. Brazil is a Brazil and like Fisher King are even better examples where you're watching it and you feel dirty and weird and awkward. And that's the whole thing about Poor Things. It was a shit ton of nudity, and it was a lot of weird sexual situations that they have her in that make you very uncomfortable when you're watching it.
Yeah.
And I did not expect that. I thought it was going to be a fun romp.
Interesting.
And it was kind of it's so unfun for me that we have 20 minutes left from 3 weeks ago and have watched 20 other things.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we'll ever get back to it now we've gone that far.
Speaking of things that we left off on, we recently started watching Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, yeah. Takes a while, man.
We've only gotten, think we're like 40 minutes in, something like that.
That is a movie, in my opinion, you should watch like it's a series.
Yeah.
Watch 40 minutes, take a break, watch another 40 minutes, take a break. It's great.
Good. It's a good idea.
It's real shitty what the white people do in that fucking movie.
Surprise.
In that movie, and even in the first 40 minutes. But man, when you're working your way through it, man, pay particular attention to how amazing fucking De Niro is. De Niro is not getting enough credit for that role. It gets even more crazy and in-depth as it goes.
I think the thing with De Niro these days is De Niro is De Niro. He's pretty much always been that, but now he's been in the game so long, he's so recognizable. Like, it would have to take a major transformation for me to be like, that's not Robert De Niro, you know?
And the thing with De Niro that a lot of people don't realize, De Niro's a huge pothead, man. And he hangs out with a lot of, like, there was a great picture. I don't know what they're filming, but it had to have been somewhat recently of a photo because Austin Butler was in it, and he's just recently become kind of a big thing. You know, the kid.
It was Elvis, right?
Elvis, and the kid from Dune, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
All the big movies. So now him and Chalamet are like. Him and Chalamet are like the big guys, right?
I listened to the last pod. You were right. As soon as you guys mentioned it, I turned it off.
What's that? Liar.
Last thing I heard was, no, Justin, don't.
There was a recent photo. So it was De Niro, Austin Butler. I think there was a third person, but there was definitely Snoop Dogg was there too. And they're just hanging around.
Yeah.
And you could see the ashtrays around. And you could tell these guys just got high and they're just just chilling. I don't know what they were doing on the set. But I think that's De Niro's thing, man. I think people think of him as the characters he plays in the movies, and don't forget that most people call him Bobby and he hangs out getting high with people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to pick that up soon.
Like some of the rewatches that I had done before we get in today's pod, I just got and I was so glad that not only the 4K was available, but the Blu-ray from the guy that splits the sets for me. So The Abyss finally came out. It has never been available on Blu-ray. It's one of the biggest movies not available on Blu-ray until like a month ago.
Wow.
And I've been reading reviews about people saying that they overscrubbed the 4K, and the 4K is horrible. Don't get the 4K, they say. They just went crazy on it where they should have stayed like the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray is gorgeous.
Now, is that something they're still doing, is like going back and finding movies? Excuse me. And like just deciding like, let's make this a Blu-ray and a 4K. 4K I can see because it's the newest thing, but
if it's a big movie like that, there's a reason it hasn't been made yet. It's logistical reasons money has to train hands between who owns it and who doesn't own it.
I guess there's a lot of
blues. There's a lot of them like that.
Blues and grays and The Abyss would probably be difficult
It is gorgeous too.
Really?
The only reason it hadn't been released, I don't know if it was James Cameron or if it was somebody who owned the rights to it that wouldn't allow it.
It's
ripe to be remade into a Blu-ray because I watched the DVD.
He needs a little more money for that next Avatar. He's like, you know what? Just go ahead and release
Squeeze that Abyss teat a little more.
Give those little bitches what they want.
But I couldn't believe that when I got the Blu-ray in the mail that they gave me the third disc because it's an expensive set.
Apparently
it's like a $60 set because it comes with the 4K, it comes with the Blu-ray, and it comes with a special feature that has like 8 hours of shit on it.
Oh, wow.
So when I bought the Blu-ray, they didn't mention they were going to send me the supplemental disc. So I got the 8 hour special features.
Oh, that's awesome. Which
is crazy. Because the DVD had a great documentary about how they almost all died. It's an amazing story and an amazing movie. So I put it in, man. And the Blu-ray is gorgeous. Hmm. I've been watching the DVD for years because that's all we had.
Yeah.
And I could not believe how good it looks on my TV. It might be one of the best looking Blu-rays that I own.
So really?
Definitely worth everyone checking out. I rewatched my mom when my mom was up. I rewatched, I just talked about it last week, the What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
I rewatched it with my mom and she loved it. And there was another movie I watched with her. I can't remember what it was. It was really good too. And then I lent her Oppenheimer and The Holdovers, which she liked Oppenheimer. She wasn't too thrilled with it was long and I don't think it was her thing. Dave would absolutely love it.
Yeah.
But she loved The Holdovers. It was a really good one.
I saw the new Mission Impossible.
Ah.
Fucking good,
man,
dude.
I love that, man. I love that Mission Impossible. I've watched it several times since I bought it. Not as many as Dial of Destiny. I have a Dial of Destiny problem. I don't know what it is because I liked it when I saw it in the theater, but every time I watch it, it gets better and better.
It's the only movie that's made you feel something in the last 30
years. I don't
know.
Maybe that's it. I even bought the old indie action figure, and it's like the best looking one.
Oh, that's
awesome.
I'll
show it to you later on. It's really great.
You were saying something about like collecting them and there's like a treasure box or something.
Oh, I
got to
show you.
Do you have the box?
There's an artifact that comes with each figure.
Yeah.
And I think you have to buy the whole line of six figures to form one thing.
Yeah.
So to get the Ark of the Covenant, you need to buy the six figures. Or you're like me, you go on eBay and just buy find the person that's selling the piece that you need or something. Because more times than not, I have three pieces, but I'm missing two. So
that reminds me of the Karate Kid toys that you got.
Oh, those ones that broke?
Yeah.
Oh, those are
awesome. That like break the blocks and stuff?
I loved it, man. Dude, yeah, so I had several of them.
Yeah.
Somewhat recently too. I still have the Karate Kid figure. I don't have the block of ice or the wood.
Did you sell it? I thought you had it.
I had that. I had the whole setup at one point, and I sold it.
Yeah.
But I kept the one of the figures. But so one of them makes the Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. One of the waves makes the skull that has the Shankara stones in its eyes and has the snake on its head. And I have that complete. And the other one is the Grail. It's like the altar with the Grail and the fake Grails and everything like that. It's pretty neat.
Sorry, this is totally random. The other day on Facebook, I was watching this video and it was like a video of the CNN reporter sitting down with a person who was like a member of some tribe and they were cannibals.
Yeah.
And like this person is speaking in their native language, mm-hmm. you know, and he's just saying like, you know, such and such and such, such Kali Ma, such and such and such and such. And I went on there and I commented, I said, I'm sorry, did he just say Kali Ma? And I had like 30 comments underneath
it.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
That's good stuff.
That's the figure I'm waiting them to release. They haven't released him yet. They're releasing like obscure ones. Like they have the Dial of the Destiny line, and I actually did buy the Phoebe Waller-Bridge figure, and I took a really great picture because she comes with like a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
So I put her on like her knees with the flashlight, and I have a great picture of her looking under my refrigerator.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a really, really great thing. But they have a figure for the Antonio Banderas character.
No shit.
Yeah, I was like, man, they're going deep on this thing. I said, they better get that fucking guy from Temple of Doom if they're going to get the Antonio Banderas and everything. And they need that little kid, man, that flew the airplane.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about him.
Yeah, but going back to Mission Impossible.
Dude, so fucking good.
I love Hayley Atwell in that movie, man. They did not use her like they should have in the Marvel movies. That's Agent Carter.
Yeah, I got to remember because it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Which role she plays.
Yeah, she's the main girl, the one that's like kind of his foil through the whole thing, and they're trying to steal. They kept stealing the hard drive back and forth.
Yeah,
from each other.
Yeah.
And she eventually put that blonde girl's face on her, and you got to see her play that character. My God, man,
they did such a good job with that aspect of it, with the face thing.
So good.
And the thing is like they've done it so many times. You know it's coming. You know they're going to use it at some
point. That's why it's good when they put it out on Front Street. That hey, we're making this mask for you.
Yeah.
That way the audience isn't like, oh, I see what's going to happen here.
Dude, it was so good. And what was the AI's name? What did they call it? Was it the Entity?
Oh, yeah, man. The idea that they used the AI was really
God, dude.
That train sequence at the end? My God, man.
Man, dude. And like how everything started, and I'm not going to give anything away, how everything started, and then like the way that the AI was able to look at all of the different outcomes and like that speech that Ving Rhames had with him about like all of the different outcomes and like, oh my God.
And Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg was great in it. They brought the team back perfect together. It was like a perfect,
It was so good. And I was so not ready for it to be over. Like as he, you know,
those are two of the last two specifically. I was so glad that I saw him in the theater because for some reason that that Fallout and this one were just the action on the big screen was like intense.
Yeah,
it was really intense. So I can't wait to the next one. Hayley Atwell is definitely going to be in it. She's one of my favorite action stars. I loved her in that movie because I had seen her in several other movies. I was a little bit more invested in her than most Marvel fans because I watched that Agent Carter for like the two seasons.
Oh yeah,
and I felt she was so good in it. I was like, this girl is so good. She's going to go on to do great things. And finally, she gets on that Mission Impossible train. And
also, Palm Clementlet.
She's awesome. That's our girl from that's Mantis from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, is it really?
Wow. With the antenna.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, she's
now
a badass, man. When she was driving, when she was driving through the streets and backing up and running over shit, she was vicious,
she
man.
She was dope.
Yeah,
like,
I loved her, man.
That was a really good fucking movie.
Really good.
And like, as it was ending,
I knew you would love it too. When I'm watching, I was like, oh, Justice got to see this movie.
One
man.
Thing that I've had to stop doing over the years, like, I'll be watching a movie and it's a good movie and I'm really into it. Yeah. And like, I always want to just hit pause real quick to see how much longer is left. Because, you know what I mean? And with this one, I didn't do it. Like, I was like, I'm not going to do it because I knew it was long. And I was like, I'm not going to hit pause to find out because I know I'm close to the end, you know? And God damn it, I just wanted like another 15 minutes to see what goes on afterwards. But like,
That's why they're part two. Well, they're not labeled.
Yeah, I guess it's not necessarily part two.
I don't care.
But
the only people that are angry at that is people are going to put it on their shelf.
Yeah.
And they don't want the part one without a part two attached to it.
Who cares? But yeah, dude, so fucking good, man.
Really, really good. I still haven't dragged myself. Who's got time? I haven't dragged myself to the theater to see Ghostbusters.
Is it out yet?
Yeah. It's been out for like 2 weeks.
No.
Yes, 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it came up. My mom came up here, so it was like 2 weeks ago.
Wow. I did not realize that.
Fans are liking it. Critics are not.
I love those movies.
I love those guys. You know? So I'm sure I'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it's not like people aren't saying this is like
this.
Like,
they're back.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
It's not. You would hear about it if it was. Like,
I mean, you got to think about it. It's essentially Ghostbusters number 5.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
This is a big year for movies, and a lot of good movies are going to come out this year, but I think our best bet of one of the better ones would be Beetlejuice. Because when you watch the trailer, they did one thing that they are missing in all these other ones. They've kept the tone exactly the same.
Yeah.
That tone of that Beetlejuice trailer that came out.
Shit looks a little dark. He looks like he's back for some revenge.
That, true, but if you're looking at the town and you're looking at everything else, they made everything look like you just stepped off that set.
They killed what's-his-name off.
Oh, well, that was a smart play.
Yeah. you can't I won't even say his name.
I'm wondering if is Otho dead?
I think because he might
be dead in real life.
I'll look and see.
Because that makes sense why he wouldn't be there, because he would be the only other person that you would expect to show up in the movie that's not there. But I just want to see how full Keaton he's going to go, and I bet he will.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely he will.
With that makeup on and everything, Jenna Ortega is a gift for the Tim Burton gods, and they'll be using her in several of his movies. So,
let's see here. Glenn Shaddix is his name. Yeah.
I've only seen him in a couple other movies.
Died in 2010.
Oh, wow. So he's been gone for a while. So, yeah. Don't expect the Otho cameo.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we did not get a Moranis cameo, or it would have been ruined for both of us already.
I'm not going to look at any cast.
I'm not,
ones.
But I think even beyond, after a couple weeks, I think I would have heard about it if there was. So we're not going to expect that. My big thing that I'm waiting for now is for that Godzilla Minus One to come on streaming.
I was wondering.
Apparently, everyone who saw it in the theater was gifted something beautiful and magic, and I fucked up royally and didn't see it. Me and my cousin are two of the biggest Godzilla fans you see, and neither of us went to the fucking movie and saw that goddamn movie. And it looks great, and people are saying it is beyond great. Apparently Spielberg says it's one of the best movies he's seen in like the last 10 years, and I was like, holy shit, I gotta see this movie.
Yeah, so, I can't wait to fucking see
it. I'm eager. I think it was June or July is that when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But before we get to, we're going to do like a semi-memorial pod today. Yeah. But before that, we just learned before the pod started that we lost another great actor, and we'll give him a little love here briefly, and that's Joe Flattery. And if you know who he is,
then you're a jackass.
He was big in my childhood because me and my cousin grew up watching SCTV. We were in a part of the country where they actually played it regularly on Saturday nights. If you don't know what SCTV is, it's basically the Canadian Saturday Night Live.
He was also on some kids show when I was growing up. I can't remember what it was.
He did.
It was like a Nickelodeon show.
Well, he was in Ed Grimley. Maybe was it Ed Grimley?
No,
because Ed Grimley was a character they made. They came up with SCTV, and Joe Flattery would do crossovers with that. But he, one of his more famous characters was he played Dracula, who was like an Elvira-esque character who was introducing all this different stuff, but stuff on the set would go wrong and he would get pissed off. And it was a lot of great stuff. If you're not familiar with the cast of SCTV, you got John Candy, Eugene Levy, Martin Short, Andrea Martin, and Joe Flattery, and Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
Those were the core members of SCTV. Rick Moranis.
Oh, yeah, and Dave absolutely.
Thomas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas. So Hoser. Those were the big people on SCTV, and then they've done all the movies we loved in the 80s. A lot of people remember him from our line there, Jackass, from Happy Gilmore. He was the one who harasses Happy Gilmore throughout the set. But he was in Stripes. He was the guard in Stripes.
Was he?
Yeah, the like Russian guard when they were in the RV. He was super funny in that, but he's made cameos in tons.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't see like a number here, but I'm sure he's got to have hundreds, you know?
He's awesome, man. It's a big loss because I think everyone else besides John Candy in that group is still alive.
Looks like 107, I think, is how many he has credits.
How many credits? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd recognize him. If any of you people listening that might not be familiar with Joe Flattery, look him up. You'll recognize his image and you'll be like, oh shit, yeah. Half my movies I like from the 80s he's in.
Absolutely.
Especially ones that included John Candy, Martin Short. They all worked him in at some point.
He wasn't in any Chevy Chase movies, was he? I don't think he was.
Unless it was a Chevy Chase movie that also included either of those two guys.
Yeah.
Like he might was he not in Three Amigos? Three Amigos would be right for him to be in too because of Martin Short.
No, I'm trying to think of who
Splash is another one because Eugene Levy and John Candy were in Splash.
Yeah,
I wonder if Flattery was in that.
Well, I already closed out that tab, so.
So sorry. Check upon your own. Well, someone else we're going to talk about here. We just found out that this legend died this week. Was like the last couple of days, right? Like 2 days ago or something. We lost the great Louis Gossett Jr. And I think with our three wild cards, two of Justin's movies will feature Lou Gossett and two of mine will feature him also. Loved Lou Gossett, and we'll talk about more of him when we hit one of those four movies.
Yeah.
But what is the first thing you ever saw him in? Because I don't think that would...
It's got to be... Now, I always get this confused. Is it The Last Starfighter or is it other...
It's The Enemy Mine.
Enemy Mine.
That's I could see why you would get... that's a weird one to be introduced to Lou Gossett Jr. with.
Yeah, when he had that face and like...
It was an ugly, ugly character, but he had difficult job.
He spoke weird and like... I was little when I saw that, so he kind of scared me. It's a
weird movie. Perfect 80s weird movie.
Yeah, and then shortly after that is one that's on your list.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think I saw him on Good Times. He did a couple cameos on Good Times where I saw him, and I'm pretty sure that I confused him as a little kid with Gordon from Sesame Street.
Really?
It's Gordon from Sesame Street. And then Officer and a Gentleman came out, and he's screaming his ass off at people. And
that's
like,
not
fuck.
Sesame Street.
Look at the mouth on Gordon.
Yeah.
All right, but we can go right off and go to our first wild card. What do you got for your one of three?
All right. Well, I'm gonna do one Lou at the beginning and one at the end.
Nice,
we're gonna sandwich something in the
middle
there.
I like that idea. I'm gonna do the same. I like the idea of a Lou sandwich.
Louis Gossett Jr.
Motley Lou.
Yeah. Lugal. So I'm gonna start off with the 1991 action thriller, Toy Soldiers.
Love Toy Soldiers.
This is a good movie.
This is a good movie.
I haven't seen it.
We had done a pod about this where we actually did the whole pod. That remember that random thing we did like 2 years ago where we sat in front of the TV and commentated a scene?
Yeah.
I think we did Toy Soldiers. So go back if you want us to go in depth with Toy Soldiers, because I'm pretty sure
we might have been you and Dave.
I think maybe we didn't do Toy Soldiers together. I thought we did Toy Soldiers.
We did.
And we sat
on
the couch.
It's
and
been a couple of years.
Yeah. So check it out. I'm pretty sure we did. But we definitely have not talked about it a lot on the pod, so it's a great one to bring up.
Yeah.
And it's also a great one that I've seen a couple pictures on Facebook with every once in a while I'll see a movie and it'd be like, came out 25 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this picture? Or one of those, if you know what this movie is, we can be friends type of thing.
Or you're old.
Toy Soldiers, yeah. Toy Soldiers is one of those movies, man, that it came out in like, what year was it? The 90s?
91.
91. So early 90s. This was like ripe for HBO, Showtime, Cinemax type movie.
I remember
you saw it, and then it was like gone.
Well, that's the thing. I remember this being like a summertime movie.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Where for like 3 months they just played it, and then it. I haven't seen it since.
They'll never play it.
I think maybe one time I saw it on like.
They might play it on Pluto. On like Pluto, like action, like their action channel, you might see find.
I think I remember seeing it one time years ago on like Dinner in a Movie on TBS. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like that's the last time that I saw it. Remember
Tubi, this
it.
Might be a Tubi. This has got Tubi written all over it. So if Tubi doesn't have it, they should definitely pick it up.
Tubi's great. You can also go back and listen to our Tubi Tuesdays.
That's true.
So you've got, and I always fuck up his last name, even though it's so simple. Is it Sean Astin or Austin?
It's Astin.
There we go. So you've got Sean Astin, Will Wheaton, Louis Gossett Jr., Keith Coogan, T.E. Russell, our boy Wishmaster, Andrew Divoff.
He's awesome.
He'll always be Wishmaster to me.
To me, the best thing he's ever done was Another 48 Hours. He was the biker guy that was going against Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte. He had the teardrop tattoo. He was the main biker dude, and he was badass, man. He was badass in that movie.
Dude, I saw a clip the other day from like, it must be Wishmaster 3 or something like that.
I have the first two.
Well, is he in jail in the second one?
I couldn't even tell
you. Dude, in this clip, he's in jail.
I think technically he's in jail in all of
them. Yeah. And he's talking, like this other inmate is like threatening him, you know? And he basically like gives him the whole spiel of like, make a wish, I'll make whatever, you know? And he was like, didn't you say you want to see your lawyer fuck himself? And he was like, yeah, I did, you know? And the guy gets a visit from his attorney and the guy ends up like twisting around and fucking himself. Like, obviously it's not on camera. It's hilarious, bro.
Oh, yeah, like, the Wishmaster's always had a level of comedy in it.
Yeah.
And, what I always thought was weird because in the movie Warlock, he did that a few times to people.
Yeah.
And I always thought, man, they took that little gimmick that
Warlock
did and they made a whole movie about it.
Yeah.
About like literal, you make this wish and it will literally come true. I want 10,000 pieces of gold and then you're all of a sudden you're a gold brick or
the
something.
The proof is there because that he goes to visit that guy to get the other stone and he tells him he'll give him the most beautiful piece of art.
Yep.
And he turns the guy into art and then Wishmaster, the exact same scene happens.
That's funny. I haven't seen the Wishmaster movies in a while. The first one I've seen maybe in the last 10 years, but 2 and 3, I probably saw him back in the day when they came out. But yeah, he was great in that movie.
But anyways, Wishmaster.
You would never even recognize him in that movie. Like, I went years without knowing that was the guy who played Wishmaster.
I didn't know it when I saw it because I don't know if it was out yet.
No.
But like, I put 2 and 2 together. Like, I go to Wishmaster first and then I go to Toy Soldiers. Who else is in this? Denholm Elliott.
Love Denholm Elliott.
He's great, dude.
Indiana Jones, he played Brody.
Yeah. What's his name? He speaks five different languages.
He's got contacts in every part of Asia. Can blend in. You'll never see him again.
Yeah, and he's like,
the next
does anyone speak English?
One of the best, the art of Spielberg is that perfect edit that makes that whole fucking scene so great.
Yeah. Emery's in it.
I love Arlie Emery. He's obviously the drill instructor from Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah. Also from The Frighteners.
He's very calm in this movie.
Yeah. Mason Adams.
Mason Adams, I love. He's from FX.
Yeah.
First FX movie.
He's great.
He's also the voice in the Cadbury Bunnies commercials.
That's awesome.
From back in the day.
Now, you're going to know this guy. I know him from this movie, and I think maybe Total Recall. Michael
Champion.
Oh, the
white-haired guy.
Yeah.
I love him from Total Recall.
There!
Like, I love the scene with he's giving Michael Ironside shit about Sharon Stone sleeping with Arnold.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's like, you're saying she's enjoying it? No, I'm sure she hated every minute of it. I love him. He got gutted by the little person
in
the bar.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That movie, that might be the only two movies I know him from.
Yeah, and then Jonathan Banks, it says, is in here.
Really?
Where
did Jonathan Banks come in this
movie? I don't know.
I love Jonathan Banks.
It could be, you know, I go to Google. I don't go to IMDb.
Jonathan Banks
Google's
was so,
easier.
Like, a minor character actor this time. He could have just been anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah, he could have been anybody.
And so this takes place at a boarding school where these bad kids with rich parents who are kind of all walks of life. One of them's like a mafia kid. Some of them are like New York Stock Exchange traders. Some just come from long lines of money. And Sean Astin, who's the main character, is like the troublemaker of troublemakers, but he's slick with it, you know? And so like it starts off, he's basically bootlegging gin or vodka in mouthwash bottles, you know.
He's very entrepreneur.
And Louis Gossett Jr., who plays the dean, busts up kind of like a drinking party and somebody like, you know, spills the beans on Sean Astin. So he has to go and get the, the alcohol back from him and everything. And like, that's kind of introducing you to his guys, you know, who are all the people that I named. And they're all, you know, getting along, everything's fine. And all of a sudden one day, Andrew Divoff and his, you know, rowdy friends come in and take the whole school hostage. And we've talked about this, I remember, one time, because I remember saying this. He puts a garage door opener on his wrist, which is then like a remote detonator to like bombs all around the school. And like they're going to do a count every couple of hours. And if nobody, you know, if somebody's missing, then they're going to start killing a child like every 15 minutes or something like that, you know?
That great reaction. If you mess with this at all, it'll explode.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Which, by the way, I love the fact that go check out this movie. Look at what he's wearing on his wrist. Then go look at your garage door opener, and it's exactly the fucking same.
Episode 211, Toy Soldiers. I named it Pots and Pans.
Yeah, there we go, because that's my favorite fucking line in the movie, you know?
It may have been me and Dave, because we did I Come in Peace. The episode was before this.
Leaving me out.
And that was... I bet we did that, because Shoot to Kill was the next one. And
well,
then,
I'll tell you what. Why don't you hit play real quick?
Fuck.
Yeah, why don't you play?
I might do that. Keep talking. I'll pull it up. We'll have a live showing of what episode it is.
Yeah, there you go. And so he's come in. He's taken all the kids hostage. And I don't think it was money that he wants. If I remember correctly, he wants like a political prisoner freed or something like
that. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. He had a whole list of them.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
But one of them was his father, I think. Or someone...
Someone to him that was important
because
they end up getting shanked.
Well, did we mention what's-his-name's dad in this movie, too, is a mobster.
That's why I said one of them was like a mafia kid.
Yeah, what was the kid? It was the kid from Adventures of Babysitting.
Was it Keith Coogan?
Yeah, Keith Coogan.
Yeah.
Whose grandfather in real life is Uncle Fester. The original.
Oh,
Uncle Fester. Awesome.
Kind of look alike? I never really thought about that
especially
before.
Now, too, because he's got a little weight on him.
Yeah, I'm looking at him right here.
Yeah, like, he looks like him, for sure. And I loved him in Adventures of Babysitting. That's what I always know Keith Coogan from.
Yeah.
But, yeah, his dad was the guy from FX and
Brian
Dirty
Denny?
Dancing. No, Dirty Dancing. He tried to put Baby in a corner.
Patrick Swayze?
No, he was in Law and Order.
Damn,
I can't remember his
name. I'm
going
to leave it
to
you.
Oh, he's probably on your list there.
Yeah, I don't think he's on this one.
He should be, because he plays the dad
that
agrees to help him out.
I don't know. I think you're thinking of somebody else.
No, it's definitely him.
Okay.
I got to think of Jerry Orbach.
Yeah,
Jerry Orbach.
I don't see him listed here, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
All right, I got Toy Soldiers right here. You want to see whose voice we hear here?
Yeah.
I'm going to play this. It was a good scene.
Yeah.
These are wired to explosives. If any one of these wires is cut, the explosives will go off automatically. If any of the individual explosives are tampered with, they will explode.
All right, let's see whose voice we hear.
That's just Paul.
That's me. I talk a lot. Oh, Jesus.
It's just Paul.
Yeah.
See, it was me.
Okay.
Pots and pans.
I feel good. Puzzle puns. I feel vindicated now.
So, so the school's been taken hostage. All of the staff and faculty has been kicked out. The fucking military comes in, sets up a perimeter, you know, and there's...
Yeah, the real deal, man. I mean, they set it up like... Because when they first showed up, they were shooting at him.
Yeah.
Too, remember? And Lou Gossett Jr. was one of the people there. He was, like, behind his door and everything, and they were like, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, because they set up, like, a fucking machine gun on the roof, like a turret, you know? And... So that's the situation. Eventually, Sean Astin like figures out that he can escape and get like information out to these people. Yeah,
that would help him.
And so he does. And, you know, the military's there. He makes his way out. They try and be like, you're not going back in there. He's like, if I don't get back there in like 15 minutes, they're going to start killing my friends. You know,
I love teenagers realizing that they have to do some adult shit right now or bad stuff's going to happen. That's why I loved it. This movie reminds me, and it has a lot of the same elements that The Rescue had.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember The Rescue? That's another obscure movie that a lot of people haven't seen.
Dillon?
Kevin Dillon.
Kevin Dillon,
Where their parents are about to be slaughtered in a foreign country, and they have to steal boats and steal the information and go over there and rescue their parents themselves because they're going to cancel the mission on them and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, awesome, man. Just to see teenagers become badasses
and
like problem solvers. And that's kind of what was going on here because Sean Astin had like the athleticism and he was the gumshoe
quick
to do it and everything.
You know?
And like when that scene you're talking about, when he gets back in and he has to. Because
he falls into the water.
Yep. So and now he's got two problems. He's got to slide into the room. I think initially he was going to slide in there and say he overslept or something like that. And he missed the time count when they were going to count all the kids to make sure they were in their rooms or whatever. And so he realizes, oh shit, I'm all wet now. So I got to go quickly, grab a towel, strip my clothes off and come in there wet and say that I was in the shower.
Yeah.
It worked. It worked.
Slapped in the fucking face hard for that shit too.
Oh man, the scene where they go into the ceiling, into the bathroom was another scene where they had to, it just comes down to some great, like that final third act, and they even let our boy Lou Gossett kind of get in there and do some serious shit.
Yeah.
He takes a bullet in this movie.
Yep. But it's a great movie, and I fucking, Louis Gossett Jr., gonna miss that dude, man.
Yep.
I mean, he hasn't been putting out a whole body of work lately, but knowing that he's not here is fucking
sad. He was
in
that Watchmen series, though. That was the last thing that that HBO Watchmen series.
Yeah.
He was in it. He looked old. He was in a wheelchair and he was doing his thing, but I think he was still walking at the time, but he was definitely old. Well, to go back to one of his early movies, and this is a movie that I always love, man, and I've recently bought it on Blu-ray just because I knew it would be super gorgeous. Is 1977's The Deep. Have you seen The Deep?
I don't think I have.
It's one of those obscure 70s movies. Dave's seen it, but I think Dave's seen it because of me. I always loved it. It's written by Peter Benchley, the novel, which is the same guy who did Jaws.
Yeah.
And
I read Jaws.
The very beginning of the movie, it starts off really strong where it's got Nick Nolte and Jacqueline Bisset at her absolute hottest. And if the opening scene is very, like, you could pull this off of the 70s type of thing, she's basically, she might as well be nude in the opening scene because she's wearing this, like, see-through t-shirt underwater while they're snorkeling,
mm-hmm.
or scuba diving, really. But they're amateur treasure hunters. They're in Bermuda, and they're just going around, and they're enjoying their vacation together. Super young, Nick Nolte also. But it's him and his wife, Jacqueline Bisset, and they're just treasure hunting, and they're finding all different things. And then when they get back to their room that night, they're emptying their like nets that they start dumping all their treasure finds in, and they're finding shells, and they're looking, hey, look at this coin. This coin's freaking old as shit. They pull out a full vial of methadone.
Oh.
Like completely unbroken bottle.
This is the one that they remade.
They remade this?
They remade this. That's a shame. With Paul Walker and like Jessica Alba.
That's horrible.
Let me find out the name of it.
I'm glad I didn't see the remake because I love this original, man. I love it so much. So they don't really realize, they know what they have is somewhat interesting and important. And what they do is they go to Eli Wallach. Eli Wallach, they go to two different people, really. They go to Eli Wallach, who's also connected to Robert Shaw, who is the Jaws connect here. Most people know Robert Shaw as Quint from Jaws.
Y'all know me.
Yeah.
You know what kind of man I am.
If you've only known him as that, then all his other characters are probably really weird to you, but I've been a Robert Shaw fan, and I love him in, like, From Russia with Love, Black Sunday, Force 10 from Navarone, and this is one of my favorite ones with him. He actually plays... It would be like Quint before he lost his mind.
Yeah.
And he, type of character, because he was, I think he was living in the lighthouse at the time. But he dealt with, he's got boats and he dealt with all the waters around Bermuda and he knew them like the back of his hand. And he knew immediately what he had, what Nick Nolte had. And he brings it to Eli Wallach. And Eli Wallach's like, there's a shipwreck down at the bottom of that ocean there. And it's tilted on its side. And it was a medical boat, and he knows all about it because he was one of the people stationed on that boat before it went down, and it was a medical boat, and he says there's thousands of them down there, and it's worth an unbelievable amount of money. But the second he pulls it, Nick Nolte pulls that thing out of the water and shows the first person, Lou Gossett Jr. is notified, because Lou Gossett Jr. in this movie is the badass drug dealer gangster.
Fuck yeah.
who wants to deal with him. And he says, at first it's like, why don't you tell me where you, he was very nice about it. Why don't you share where you found this from? This is something of interest to me. I'm kind of a collector myself. I'm willing to give you a certain amount of money for what you find and everything. And then he says, no, I think we're going to go our own way with it. And he's going to go off with Robert Shaw and they're going to collect him and everything.
Yeah.
And there's a couple great scenes in this movie, man. Some really fantastic underwater scenes past the opening. that was the scene where they're actually collecting the methadone of the drugs down there in the little vials. Mm-hmm. They have these underwater like vacuums and they're putting them down there and it's just like pulling them up and putting them into it. The other end is like a goes into this big ass bag.
Yeah.
And they're pulling them up bag after bag after bag.
Yeah.
There's also one of the more famous scenes in it. I think it was more of a drama kind of thriller, and I think with the whole Jaws connect, you thought it was going to be a lot more action packed than it actually was. It was more of a thriller, and the scenes dictated what your enjoyment with it. But the one of the best kind of established things that happened is Nick Nolte is going around the wreck, and he goes into this one creepy looking hole, very unique hole, but he goes in there and a huge moray eel dives his head right out of there, and you're like, holy shit, that's fucked up. Well, there's a scene later when he's wrestling Lou Gossett Jr. Under the water, and you see him right near the fucking cave, and he's bringing him right over to the cave.
Yeah.
And it's so satisfactory. It's exactly what you want. That's fucking awesome. Eel comes out and just latches onto the top of Lou Gossett's head. You're like, oh, gotta get the drug dealer. That's
great. I love that.
It was great, man. I really enjoyed The Deep, and I go back to it every once in a while just to watch it. It's a really one, especially if you can find like a 4K or a Blu-ray copy online that you're wherever you're streaming it. It's worth it because it's all like underwater type stuff.
So in 2005, Into the Blue.
Into the Blue, and that's what it was, huh?
Yeah, and it's cocaine. It's not morphine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jessica Alba, Paul Walker. Let's see who else. Let's see who the bad guy is. Wouldn't it be great if it was Louis Gossett Jr.? I'm guessing it's probably Josh Brolin.
That makes sense. Yeah. He's not playing a nice guy in many
things. That's why.
It's weird that Josh Brolin doesn't play a nice guy in many things. It never really occurred to me just now that he plays nothing but villains and stuff.
I mean,
Cable, maybe,
is
the most likable one, but you think the Planet Terror movie, he's kind of a scumbag.
Fuck, what's that one?
Maybe the No Country for Old Men, he was kind of an anti-hero because he was kind of a scumbag.
What am I? Sicario.
Oh, man, the second Sicario.
I need to fucking watch both of those again.
He was a scumbag. Was he in the first one, too? I think he was just in the second one.
Yeah, no, he was the first one, too.
Really?
He was the main agent in the first one.
God, I thought he was just in the second one. The second one when he visited the guy and talked about torturing?
Yeah.
Oh, man, he was great in that one.
That was a fucking good movie.
Yeah.
He's like, we're not in America. Yeah. I can do whatever American the fuck History I X? Want.
Oh, my God.
Is Josh Brolin in that?
Josh Brolin's the one who shot Denzel's dog and tried to extort all the money from him. He was the main bad guy.
In American History X?
No, not American Gangster.
Oh, okay, American okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that might have been the biggest scumbag that I ever played. So, yeah, my guess is he was the guy into the blue.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're probably
I never
right.
knew it. I never knew that was a remake. I'm not sure I ever knew that movie was a thing. I must have just came and gone, man.
Yeah.
Probably not very highly rated, I would imagine. But that's The Deep, man. The Deep is probably, I can look it up real quick on the watch now and see if it's available streaming for anybody to watch for it. We probably should do this more often. To let people know where they can find things. And if you have Fubo, which I actually do have, you can stream it through them, or you can rent it for $3.99, which is a great deal, through Apple TV.
Hell yeah.
Apple, you owe me money now.
So I'm going to start this one off with a spoiler alert.
Oh, shit.
I don't know that this is one that was a big movie, but I'm going to tell you the end of it.
You heard of Star Wars?
Yeah. No, so this is more recent. This is 2017.
Okay.
It's called It Comes at Night.
Why does this sound familiar? It Comes at Night. All right, you continue talking.
It's a horror mystery type movie. The reason I'm going to spoil it is because everything about it is completely misleading. If you watch the trailer,
I didn't rate it. It's on Max. Yeah, Joel Edgerton. That doesn't bode well.
Yeah, Riley Keough. I don't even know who she is, but that Riley name Keough, sounds familiar. Wait,
No, that's Elvis's granddaughter. I can tell you that.
Oh well, that's probably why
she was in Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay. That's about it. I don't know. The name, I guess it's because she's Elvis's granddaughter, then the name is familiar.
Yeah. I've heard about this, but yeah, I've never seen it. So you like it or you don't like it?
You're about to hear all about it. I'm still kind of undecided.
Okay.
It's a good movie, but the movie is called It Comes at Night. Remember,
is this a drag through concrete thing? Nothing happens with that name.
Similar to when you said, I remember, and I quote, when a movie is called The Last Fucking Duel, you have to have a fucking duel.
Yeah.
Right? I've never seen that movie.
It did
but
have
I
a
know
duel.
There's no, oh, you yeah. said it didn't have
no,
a duel.
No, it does have a duel.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Last Duel, yeah.
All right. So it's a post-apocalyptic, not really explained. The movie's called It Comes at Night. So is it a creature?
Mm-hmm.
Is it zombies? What the fuck is it?
Mm-hmm.
You never fucking know.
Huh.
Because nothing fucking comes at night.
Yeah.
Like, nothing comes during the daytime either. Like, but it's a suspenseful movie if you don't know that. Because the whole time I'm sitting there going, well, any minute now, something's going to come out of those woods at night. You know?
I know the exact movie you're talking about that I was talking about. I'm going to pull it up right now. It stars Karen Gillan in it. It made my worst list of that
month
of that year. That I think it was last year I watched it. It made one of the worst movies I ever seen.
Yeah.
I shit on it the whole time.
Yeah.
I gotta give it one more shit. Yeah. Oh, you were so close. It was just called The Duel.
Oh, The Duel.
Yeah, Last Duel is the Ridley Scott one. It's awesome.
Oh, with Matt Damon. Damon.
Yeah, one's a good one.
Yeah.
No, The Duel. That's the one with Aaron Paul and her in it. Oh, it was so fucking garbage.
Yeah. This is the same fucking principle,
funny.
Dude. So Joel Edgerton, who I've never really seen him before, but he did a good job in this.
He was in The Warrior. Remember The Warrior with him and Tom Hardy? He was also in that Thing remake. He was the main guy in that. That's how forgettable he is.
So the cast
Black
in this,
Mass.
I just don't recall him.
Yeah.
You know,
he gets that a lot.
So I mean, all in all, the acting is good in this. Yeah. The directing is good in this. I don't have a problem with that.
She's good, but she's kind of like a low key Kristen Stewart. I'd be like, what? You couldn't afford Kristen Stewart? You had to get Riley Keough.
Yeah. So basically, you've got three main characters: Joel Edgerton, Carmen Ihogo, I think her name is, and Kelvin Harrison Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very beginning it's David Pendleton is their grandfather, is the grandfather. The first scene of the movie, David Pendleton is dying. He's got some kind of a disease. Mm-hmm. They fucking smother him and fucking shoot him in front of his grandson.
Wow.
Almost as if to say, like,
that sets you up for this is what this is going
to
be.
Right? You know, almost as if to say, you need to know how to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then he goes out and he digs a shallow grave and he fucking burns the grandfather. Mm-hmm. To me, we're lining up for some zombies.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Something.
I'm fucking here for it. You know what I mean? Also, he brings his son along to watch him burn his grandfather. Right? Like, and they're even sitting at the table after this having dinner. And the mother is like, you shouldn't have fucking done that in front of him. You know what I mean?
Is this, like, a period piece at all? Or is it?
No, this is present day.
Okay.
You know? And the kid is not all there.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily autistic. He's just not all there.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day, Christopher Abbott, who plays Will, kind of fucking shows up at their house, you know, and he's kind of breaks in because obviously this is a post-apocalyptic world. People aren't supposed to be there, you know? So he's literally coming in, like, looking for food.
Yeah.
And the dad gets in there, fucking kicks his ass, ties him to a tree, you know, like, knocks him out, ties him to a tree, leaves him out there, and, like, basically comes out and is like, look, I'm going to give you a choice. You can either have this gallon of water or I can fucking kill you right now. It all depends on what you're going to tell me. Why are you here? Mm. You know? And he's like, I've got a family. We're running low on food. I swear to God, I thought your fucking house was empty. I would have never broken into your house. I've got, like, a goat, a couple of chickens, and some other stuff, but we're out of fucking water and these few things. If you want to make a deal, you can take me. We'll get those things. We'll bring them back. We'll share all our stuff. And that's the way it's going to be. Deal made, right? They're on their way there.
So far, sounds like The Last of Us.
Dude, right? you know? But also, sounds really fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, like, they've got me for this storyline.
Mm.
So they're driving to his place, you know, and you don't know if this guy's telling the truth or not. You know what I mean? Like, he's just kind of like, make this deal with me. You and I will go together and, like, you can trust your family that we'll come back, you know? So they're on their way there. Out of nowhere, somebody starts fucking shooting at him, you know? They wreck the truck. They kill these guys, you know? Nobody else around. Just two random people who maybe thought, you know, we could either take something from these people or you're in our area. No explanation at all. Just,
I mean, yeah, it's they're developing the world. That's the thing with post-apocalyptic, because they need to be real specific about what the roles are, what your threats are.
Yep.
I mean, almost all of them agree that their threats are other people.
Right. And they even say, like, check to make sure they aren't sick. Yeah. So you know there's a disease going on out there. Yeah. You don't know what it is and what happens in the dark in It Comes at Night, you know what I mean?
Shitty name. What a shitty dude, ass name.
And the trailer is, like, showing the trees at night, you know what I mean? Like, spoiler alert, nothing fucking comes at night, dude. So, guys telling the fucking truth, he brings his wife and his small child and the goats and the chickens and da-da-da back to this place. Life is good, you know?
They want you to remember the movie, called it The Night We Burned Grandpa.
Right? Like,
I would remember that
everything
shit.
Changed when Grandpa died. Okay, now we can fucking watch a movie.
When Grandpa got crispy.
Yeah, you know? And so life is going good. There's some mistrust there. And, you know, they're forming their bonds. The character development is happening. And you're kind of wondering what's happening. And, like, one night, like, The dog runs off for some reason. It starts barking at something during the daytime and it just runs off. And the kid tries to go after it for a while, but it runs away. That's the end of that scene. One night, somehow, some way, one of the doors gets opened, you know, to the outside, which means that somebody who's sick could have come into the house and da 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 da. Nobody opened the door. They all sit at the table. They have a conversation. They blame it on somebody. They didn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, So they're trying to figure out, like, okay, well, as long as everything's fine, we can get past this, Let's go quarantine in our rooms to make sure that nobody gets sick. The people who made the deal and come over, the little kid ends up getting sick, you know. Also, the older kid is also getting sick. So, like, they don't know who to blame anything on.
Yeah, so it's a...
It's, you know, what the fuck? So the people who lived in the house originally realize, okay, because they hear their kid coughing, the other kid coughing, and they're like, they're going to try and take whatever they can from us. They're going to try and fucking rob us, and they're either going to kill us and live here, or they're going to try and take half of our shit and haul ass, you know?
So far, you got me.
Right?
I mean.
Well, again, it comes at night.
Yeah.
The trailer tells you that there's some dark shit that happens in the woods. You know what I mean? Something's coming for them, you know? So... Dude goes, he's got his mask on, he's got his gun, he's at the door. He's like, hey, let me in, we need to talk, da 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 da. They open the door, and somehow they get the drop on him. Now they have the gun. The wife gets the drop on them, and she gets the gun back. They make it out to the front yard, and the family goes to make a run for it. And the fucking guy takes a shot and kills the kid. Fucking kills this, you know, I mean, kid's like five, dude. He's adorable, you know. Has to end up killing the dad, too. And Riley Keough.
That was Joel Edgerton got killed?
Joel Edgerton was the guy with the gun.
Okay.
Christopher Abbott is the one who gets shot. Yeah. And so the kid gets shot, and Riley Keough just starts screaming, kill me! Kill me! Over and over, and he fucking kills her, and like... That's the end of the movie. They then shoot to the next scene, which is just them at the table having something to eat. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, I don't, that doesn't seem like something I would not like. I think I would like
if that, I would have known movie. What I was walking into.
But yeah, it's one of those things that you don't want to kind of sell your movie one way and then deliver it another.
Yeah, you know, like it was a good movie.
The name, first of all, is garbage. It could have been this very underground thing. It sounds like something that like Maggie, like what some Arnold would do.
Yeah.
Would be great.
So
that type of movie.
So the only thing that I could think of that would like make it be called that is there's one little twist to it. And you know, it's not a big enough twist to make like a holy shit moment. So apparently the older boy sleepwalks, and at some point the dog came back, and the dog is what had the disease on it. It had run somewhere and got the disease, and it was dead in the little room between the house and the door. The kid unlocked the door and I guess touched the dog while he was sleepwalking, and I guess technically the dog came back at night.
Well, that's a huge kind of thing to put in there that...
It's random, too, though. It's weird. Random. They show this kid having really weird fucking dreams a couple of times.
Was it the house that had anything to do with anything?
No. This kid's... So, from what I can tell, this kid had some kind of psychological break with the shit that happened with his grandfather in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then having to, like, see his dad fight that dude and take him hostage and, like... going through whatever apocalyptic event that had gone on, which was obviously some kind of a disease, this kid had like a mental break. He wasn't sleeping. He was dreaming. And I mean, his shit was dreams. Like, it was dreams all the way until the end of the movie when it was him sleepwalking. You know what I mean? And like, that wasn't a dream. That really happened. But they played it in the same scenario as every other dream that he had.
Interesting.
It just didn't fucking add up. You know what I mean? Like, it...
It's frustrating when the
I really when wanted
you
to like
when you
it.
Lose the movie at the last 10 minutes. It's
I
frustrating
really
as
wanted
shit.
To like it.
There was a
know?
Movie. Was it called Cam or it was about it was this Cam girl who lost her identity and someone was portraying herself with her, like it's like AI took over her identity and was like posting as her, and it was frustrating as shit. And it was and she was trying to hunt down who was impersonating her and everything, and it came down to the end and they just blew it, and I was like, man, this was such a good movie all the way through it, man. They really nothing's worse than
all it
a
needed,
fucked up ending.
Make a different trailer and change the name, and I would have been like, dude, this movie was amazing. You know what I mean? Like, and I spoil at the end because the kid gets killed, because literally, like, we were both like, are you fucking serious? That kid just got fucking shot. You know what I mean? Like, all of this buildup and the kid gets fucking shot. Like, it was just, you know.
Interesting. Well, I will bring it a little bit more upbeat.
Yes, thank you.
Children are getting killed. To my middle movie in my Louis Gossick sandwich, the meat, as you would say, in the Louis Gossick sandwich.
Yeah.
And this is a movie that I'm sure you've seen, and you've probably seen several times. I just had never seen it because a lot of his later movies I wasn't as much of a fan of. But I had gone back to a little bit before I thought he kind of jumped the shark with a lot of his films, which is Adam Sandler. And I gave a rewatch. Well, we rewatched. This isn't the movie I'm going to talk about, but we rewatched Wedding Singer. And I always liked Wedding Singer, and I was like, that's cool. I said, but let's watch this other movie, and I had to buy it. And I knew it was mass-produced big time because I had always seen it, DVD sales and stuff. I said, I bet I can get it for $3. I think I got it for $2.50. I loved it. Was 2004's 50 First Dates.
Oh, that's a really good movie.
I had never seen 50 First Dates. I knew the premise.
Yeah.
That she had like a memento thing going on.
Yeah.
And instead of like her memory being wiped after 10 minutes, it's actually 24 hours.
Yeah.
24 hours go by, she can't create new memories.
Yeah, every day she wakes up, she thinks it's the same.
It's the same day.
It's her dad's birthday every day.
And that's what took this to another level was that whole idea.
Sean Astin's in this one, too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Sean Astin is in this. So you got Blake. It's not Blake Edwards, I don't think, but he plays the dad, and he was great in Waterboy.
Oh, yeah.
As the Cajun guy.
Omen when you make it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You like to see homos naked. No. Omen when you make it.
What the hell is his name? I don't want to get it wrong because I talk about him a lot. Blake Clark is his name, and he used to be in the that Grace Under Fire show back in the day, and I always loved it. And he's the voice of Slinky Dog now that Jim Varney died.
Oh, really?
Because Ernest was the original voice of Slinky Dog, and then when he died, Blake Clark took over, and he does a great job as Slinky Dog. Sounds just like him. Basically, just doing an Ernest impression.
Yeah.
So he plays her dad that is really not doing her any favors by his heart's in the right spot, but he wants to recreate, because she can't form new memories.
Yeah.
She wants to recreate this same day over and over and over again. And the extents that him and his son go to make that happen is wild.
Yeah.
He's almost the real movie here, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The guy that really kind of enables what is going on with her. And I understand, like I said, his heart was in the right place. But since the whole thing started when there was a traumatic incident when they were driving, and I think they were avoiding a cow or something like that on the road.
Yeah.
And they hit
She was going to get a pineapple for her dad's birthday.
That's right. And they were in the Jeep together, and they slammed into a tree. The dad was fine. She got injured and has this certain head injury, and he tries to give her the same day over and over so she doesn't have to know that she's got this condition where she can't...
We're having a bad day, Doug.
Yeah. So... Then you get to see what the father and the brother do. Like she comes, we see her have this interaction at the cafe with Adam Sandler. I'll get into Adam Sandler in a second.
Yeah.
But she has this interaction with Adam Sandler. Then she goes to her dad's house. She's happy that it's her birthday. He says, hey, what, you want to come in here and paint this room?
Imagine how thick the paint would have to be on those walls.
For sure. So she paints the walls and everything, and they have this great night together, and they enjoy... what was the movie they watch?
Oh, that's the one thing I'm not going to remember. Man.
And it's hilarious because it's a movie that you're like, do you want to watch this movie? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's something with a twist ending.
Sixth Sense.
Yeah, Sixth Sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they average.
Yes, having to watch that every day.
So they have to do this every day. This is for like a year. This is Blake Clark and Sean Astin's life.
Yeah.
And Sean Astin's fed up with it. You could tell and he's got this weird lisp in the movie.
Yeah.
Also the best shape you've ever seen Sean Astin.
But he's also like on steroids in the movie. Yeah.
Well, in real life, Sean Astin got into marathon running.
Oh, really?
Now he's gained it back. He's like 100 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
I kind of like fat Sean Astin now. Yeah. The roles are like him and Stranger Things. Have you seen
tubby little
buddy. Did you see the season of Stranger Stranger Things with him in it?
I think that I did. I know that I saw him in one, but I think like
he was only in one season.
Okay, then I saw him.
And he was incredible. Yeah, he had one of the best kind of. He was fucking great in that. That last episode with him in it was so good.
Yeah, I didn't see the last season yet.
It was good. Yeah, definitely check it out. But I love Sean Astin. The idea that we don't talk about Sean Astin the way we do. Michael J. Fox.
Whiterunner Summer, man.
I mean, it's ridiculous. He has done just as much crazy shit as Michael J. Fox. Our entire childhood, Sean Astin. He comes from royalty. His mom is Patty Duke.
Oh, really?
His dad is John Astin, who plays Gomez, who's still alive, just celebrated his 93rd birthday.
Oh, wow.
The original Gomez. Yeah. That's his dad. And so he's the kind of offshoot of those two. And
it's interesting. He kind of looks like Joe Flattery a little.
Joe Flattery?
No, the Sean Astin's dad as the original Gomez.
Oh, the original Gomez? Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
I used to love John Astin Night Court. He had like a repeating role as a mental patient that was Harry's dad in Night Court, and he was great. He must have been in like five or six episodes.
That's funny. I loved it.
So when she has this perfect day, they immediately start and paint the walls white again.
Yep, take a little snapshot.
They everything that she did during that day, they put back to normal so they can recreate the next day.
Yeah.
So here comes the Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler is looking for love. He's looking for that soulmate that he's always been looking for. His friend is Rob Schneider, and Adam Sandler puts all his guys in these movies, even the creepy ones.
Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore, because a lot of them turned out to be a little creepy, specifically one guy.
But also hi, I'm Tom.
Oh, I love him. He's great. 10-second Tom was one of my favorite bits in the whole fucking movie.
And Dan Aykroyd
plays a doctor who is explaining the condition with him and everything. So he falls in love with her. The people at the cafe know about it. The waitress and like owner is the woman from Next Friday. Well, to my homies.
Yeah.
She's the neighbor, the Asian woman.
Is it Annie, I think her name is in that? I can't remember.
Oh, man. It's super funny, man. And it's super and also, enjoyable.
The guy she has in the kitchen that is always making the spam and eggs.
The guy with the face tattoo.
Yeah.
Like a big Hawaiian guy.
Big
man.
Samoan
and it takes
dude,
place
yeah.
in like Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
Too. So it's enjoyable on all levels for me. But it's this really, it's a love story, obviously, but it's done in such a clever way. And you forget how funny and charismatic Drew Barrymore was back in the day. You know, and now she's kind of a talk show host.
No, it's a really cute movie. I haven't seen it in years, and you can tell I've seen it 100 times because I really enjoy it. It's funny. And it's cute and like a little sad. And,
a bigger role than Rob Schneider's usually playing. Yeah. Usually he's just that guy that says, go get her.
But it's funny how many.
Suck.
Yeah, but it's funny how many different ethnicities he seems to play.
Yeah, like in Mr. Deeds, he played someone different. Did he play someone?
Not Mr. Deeds. He played
definitely
like,
in this because he was like a Spanish in this.
Yeah.
And he had that weird milky eye.
In, what's the one where he's a hairdresser?
The Zohan?
Yeah, he plays like
an Israeli guy.
He plays like a fucking terrorist in that. And then he plays Hawaiian in that.
He's majorly problematic now, too.
What's the other one where he's the dad? You give him all the easy ones. what's the name of that one?
Big Daddy?
Big Daddy, yeah.
That's what I was thinking of when I thought of Mr. Deeds.
Hip Hop?
That was the best part
Hip-hop
of
Hip Hop Anonymous?
That was the best part of Big Daddy, in my opinion. His buddies on the couch there.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's problematic now, too.
Yeah.
People are distancing themselves from Rush.
Yeah, he's just decided to, like, own it. I saw that
he's just angry. He's just angry, and he's pissed off. And
I saw recently that he just started doing, like, stand-up again.
Yeah.
And, like, he was playing to a packed theater, and they all agreed with everything he was saying.
Very anti-vax, very MAGA, very just... You can see why a lot of people are distancing themselves.
But Ricky, he's fucking funny, man.
You, Ricky Schroeder, and John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard are all in the same group.
Yeah.
And Charles in Charge guy? Scott Baio?
Yeah.
It's crazy, man, that those are the voices.
Yeah.
All right. So, 51st Dates. It's a good one, man.
All right. Let's see. So...
final Lou Gossick. Oh, we all know what this is going to be. If you're a fan of this pod, you know this is going to be, and you should be thrilled that we're about to talk about it because it's always a great one to talk about.
One of my all time favorite
Eric too,
movies.
Man. My cousin, huge fan. He watched it the other day when Lou Gossick died.
I'll probably watch it in the next month. Digstown.
Digstown. One of the funniest, best con movies ever made.
So
best con movie
dude.
Ever made, in my opinion.
Oh, God.
Dude. Even better than The Sting. That's right. You're all screaming out there. I like The Sting, too, but when it comes over to Digstown, fuck The Sting. Digstown has it, man.
I literally don't even know where to start with this movie, just with how much I fucking love it.
Every character was phenomenal in it. Yeah, obviously, James Woods is an asshole. We're going to talk about him.
He was great
because
in this fucking
movie,
though.
He was so great in this
because
movie.
Because of James Woods being James Woods yep. in this movie, you know.
I have a hard time with James Woods because yeah. I loved him in The Hard Way. I loved him in fucking Digstown, man. He was just great back in the day, and it's yeah. a fucking shame what's happened to him.
Yeah.
But let's just talk about how he was in this film, and he was incredible.
So
Oliver
good,
Platt.
Dude.
Oh, Oliver Platt fucking
probably
kills
my
it.
Favorite role of all time.
Of
his.
Of his.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of them, man. Oliver Platt is always great.
He's so
I loved
good,
him in that Christmas movie, that one with John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton. I keep forgetting what the hell the name is. It's one of Dave's favorites. Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that one.
Sorry, Dave.
Bruce Dern. My God, Bruce Dern, man. Dude. Bruce Dern is one of my favorite actors. I love him in a lot of the old ones people haven't seen, like Silent Running and Black Sunday. He is so good in.
The fucking ego on his character in this movie
is
so good. Fucking amazing. I mean, just basically play it like this. You've never been wrong in your life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, yeah. And
he James, owns the town, the bravado that you can have when you know you own everything and everybody,
around you. In it, you know,
yep. like, and that you're not going to, it's like that poker player that you come across that is just so fucking snooty and shit that you know that he's going to get taken down
money.
At some point.
Yeah.
You'll get taken down. You
yeah.
might be the best at this very moment, but someone else is going to come around
yeah.
and they're better than you. And that person would be James Woods.
Dude, I my favorite quote from this fucking movie.
Yep.
Never try and con a con man.
Yeah.
Especially when he's better than
yep.
you are.
Especially when he's better than you.
Man, get the fuck out yep. of here, dude.
My favorite line, someone remind me on Sunday when we're at church, thank God for making fools.
Yeah.
So every line in this movie is almost quotable too.
Yeah.
It's such a great, I love when a movie comes up with a gimmick. You know, it's like a clear-cut gimmick that you can pitch to somebody in an elevator, and it's the perfect elevator pitch.
Yeah,
and it's a con movie. Go ahead, I'll let you do it.
No, go for it. I mean,
it's a con movie where it's dealing with boxers, and the bet is between James Woods and Bruce Dern that Lou Gossett Jr. is such a good fighter that he can fight 10 Digstown men. Boxers in 24 hours and come out
all.
And beat them all.
Yeah.
And this all was stemming from a not drunkard, we find out, which was
yeah.
great. But because, like I said, this is a con movie. So it's like setup after setup after
yeah.
setup. And when you think you didn't see the next setup coming, bam, they
yeah.
hit you with another one.
Yeah.
It's just one after another.
And when you do think, oh, you know what's going to happen?
Yep.
You're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then when you think the movie's over, something
yeah.
else happens.
Like, oh,
and
man.
You're like, ah, oh, it's
all
so
the way down
fucking
to the
good.
End.
The last third of this movie, woo.
Oh, my God, dude. I'm going to have to watch this
yeah,
again.
Yeah, it's such an enjoyable movie, man. It really, really is.
One of my favorite scenes that Louis Gossett Jr. in this movie. So here we go. James Woods is in prison. His cellmate is Randall Craig Tex Cobb.
Randall,
you know,
Tex
yeah,
Cobb.
Tex Cobb.
Raising Arizona.
Absolutely. that's the first thing I saw him
yep,
in
yep.
for sure.
Love
and
that.
I never forgot who he was because
oh, yeah.
I was so young when
I
saw
told
that.
You, I probably mention this every time we talk about Randall Tex Cobb, but I'll do it again.
Yeah.
My mom's husband, Bob,
yeah.
Saw him in a bar fight. Mm-hmm. Like it was like boxing.
A sanctioned
yeah,
match.
Yeah, sanctioned
but at
match.
A bar,
it was
yeah.
like Friday night fights or
yeah.
something like that. He saw him in a bar in Detroit fighting
yeah.
Before. And he said he was the wildest, strongest guy he'd ever seen.
Didn't he fight Ali?
Yeah. That I don't know, but
I'm
I know he was.
I'm almost positive he, or maybe it was Joe Louis or George
maybe.
Foreman.
It might have been a major guy, but I know he was more of a street guy or just like a club boxer.
Hang on, I'm looking this up. Larry Holmes.
Larry Holmes.
He
okay,
beat
okay.
he beat Larry Holmes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, Larry Holmes is a big boxer too,
yeah.
man. So yeah. Randall Tex Cobb. He's another person. If you guys pull him up, you'll know immediately. Fletch Lives.
Yeah.
Fletch Lives.
So he's his cellmate. And so God, I hate to fucking spoil anything for people who haven't seen this
well,
movie.
Just don't spoil the last like two things, you know? Because it's all about that final ending.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, because I guess you do find out when he talks to Heather Graham in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, you could. That's fine.
Okay, so the basis of the movie is this town is called Diggstown. There was a guy. His name was Charles Makem Diggs, mm-hmm. and you got to say all three names. And he was basically in line to become the heavyweight championship. He was, like, undefeated, I think, and he was having, like, the biggest fight of his career. And the whole town bet that he was going to fucking win. The whole town, except mm-hmm. for one guy. And the and that's actually the guy that, like, they're training at his farm. And he watched everybody else lose all their money and their property. And he said, well, what'd you do? He said, I went fishing. You know what I mean? Everybody thought they were going to make a quick buck. So it turns out that Bruce Dern was drugging his fucking, either his nose spray or his water. I don't remember which one, but
nasal spray. Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah. And, you know, Charles Makem Diggs should have fallen rounds before he did, but because of the drugs, he just kept going and kept going. And
also Vigo.
I was just about to say, and Vigo the Carpathian got taken and put into a wheelchair and, like, never walked or spoke or moved, for that matter, ever again, until you see that fucking pinky rise.
Oh, man.
Whoo! But
there's some good editing in this movie. This movie was well done and very satisfying at the end.
And so James Woods has found this out, and he's a con man, and he knows, not only can I go win a shit ton of money, ruin this guy, and give a town back to their fucking people. You know what I mean? Like, it, you know, oh, and he brings in that fucking gangster, and then who's the smart dude? Michael DiLorenzo is, like, his little right-hand guy. It's just the setup, man.
It's such a great movie, man. It's so fucking good. It's all about ringers and about people getting into town early to set shit up and to work things through.
Oh, and that...
And what's great about it is you're seeing these addicted gamblers too, you know, they are addicted to gambling and he's playing on that double. That's how many times they double or nothing and everything,
dude.
Or just put their knife on the line or set parameters for the rules and this and that. And it was all set up and perfectly paid off.
The setup for the whole thing, when James Woods is watching the fight go down and Bruce Dern comes in and the two of them are kind of battling nuts, trying to see who the bigger guy is, you know, with talking shit. And at the same time, Oliver Platt's over at the bar, you know, playing Bruce Dern's son for pink slip on the new fucking 74 Corvette that he just fucking bought him, you know, and he's hustling the shit out of
him. That scene's so good.
It's so good. And then the way that, like, James Woods loses that bet and how he loses that bet and the next step to Bruce Dern going to save his son all the way into the boxing matches to the end of the fucking thing and, like, how it all comes back to play. Dude, go watch this fucking movie if you haven't seen it.
And we should mention Lou Gossick in it, man. I mean, Lou Gossick was probably 57 when this movie came out.
Absolutely.
Shirtless, fighting, in the ring, physical movie, even being fake, obviously. But it's still, Lou Gossick Jr. had to do some shit in this movie, and he shined, man. Him and James Woods back and forth. He's like, I'm trying to motivate you. It's like a Roots type of thing. Well, you are for shit for motivation. And much like Shawshank Redemption, if you don't leave the theater or leave this movie feeling satisfied and good, I don't know what you're looking for in your movies, because this has it, and it has it all, man. It really does have it all.
And just, you know, to finish it off, my favorite scene of Louis Gossett Jr. is probably in the whole movie is when, because James Woods has planned this entire con. He hasn't even told Louis Gossett Jr.
yet. Then he's part of it.
Yeah. So he goes down there and he's running the con on him too. And basically, Louis Gossett Jr. ends up calling Oliver Platt. Oliver Platt tells him the plan because he thinks that he's in, only for him to go, I'm not fucking in. Nobody's talked to me about anything. He goes over to James Woods' hotel room.
His wife had that look on her face the whole time.
Oh, yeah. You know, he can't sleep, you know? And so at like 3 a.m., he goes over to James Woods' hotel room. He's banging on the door, and he finally comes and he answers the door, and he said, you fucked up.
I don't think James Woods says a word.
No, yeah. This whole sequence. He said, you fucked up. You got yourself into a job with Victor Corsini, and you didn't even ask me because you just thought I was going to bail you out this time. Well, I got news for you. I'm not. And he slams the door, and then he comes back, and he opens the door, and he goes, pick me up at 8.
You can tell, listen to Justin talking about that it's one of his favorite movies of all time.
So good, dude.
I mean, it's got to be, it's in your top five, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd say it's probably three.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Fantastic movie, man. Definitely. It's, most people would agree, it's probably one of Lou Gossett Jr.'s best films.
It has to be, dude.
I'm seeing a lot of people would think Officer and Gentleman too, but it's not my jam, you know?
It wasn't a critically acclaimed fucking movie, but if you watch it, you will go, that is one of the best movies he ever made.
Yeah. You know? It's one of those people discovered on VHS type of thing or on cabled movie.
I saw it in the theater with my dad.
Oh, see, that's special because I never even saw it in theater myself.
I actually was just mentioning that because I knew I was coming here today.
Yeah.
My dad's been having some memory issues and I said, oh, you know, Louis Gossett Jr. died, and he was like, oh, that's really sad. I said, do you remember going to see the movie Digstown in the theater? And he said, yeah, I do remember that. So, like, I mean, shit, that was 92.
Yeah.
You know?
92. Like, yeah. I got the video and I introduced it to everybody. It was one of the more fun movies. Back then, I used to love renting movies and just watching them with people and waiting for their reaction when certain scenes. And Digstown's the perfect one for that.
Because it's a con movie and a boxing movie. Yeah. And it, like, that hits two of my major fucking things.
I mean, it's probably got more boxing than most of the Rocky movies. But it's 10 people. But it's done in a fun, comedic and great way. It's not, there's not a lot of, there is drama at points in the movie, but.
So this is amazing. I just realized, I just put two and two together. So there's a scene in the movie that ends up with a twist where Bruce Dern tells his son to go up there, step out, up to the ropes, but don't go inside of the ring and glare at him and turn around and walk away. Yep. Right? A couple of years ago, there was this fighter who said the whole time, like, I'm underpaid. I'm not going to take this fight. Mm-hmm. I'm on contract for it. Y'all are going to pay me, but I'm underpaid. He went, walked into the ring.
Yeah.
The moment the bell rang, he walked out of the ring and he collected a paycheck because it counted because he stepped into the ring.
That's funny.
After all these years, it's confirmed they weren't fucking lying.
Like, Bruce Dern, man. I mean, I don't know. Have we lost Bruce Dern yet? I think Bruce Dern's probably
I think he's
gone.
Still around.
Yeah, because he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I think he is still around. Unless he died
87 years old and motherfucking kicking.
Fucking love him, man. It's hard for me. This is one of the more perfect roles for him, but I love him so much in The Burbs that I would have to put The Burbs right up there with him. But if you haven't watched early friggin' Bruce Dern, people, watch Silent Running is an awesome one with him. And the other one is Black Sunday, man. He is so good, where he plays a terrorist in Black Sunday. Yeah. He was like a terrorist that had like what is it? I don't know what it was called then, but when the soldiers come back, you know, and they have... they were calling it different things at different times. What, shell shock?
PTSD,
yeah. I think it was what eventually. Yeah. Back in the time, I think it was shell shock.
Yeah.
And they showed him, and he was just losing his mind, and he was going to detonate a bomb in the Goodyear blimp above the Super Bowl.
Oh, I remember hearing about that movie.
Oh, it was great. They filmed it
at the Super Bowl.
Like the Dallas Cowboys, I think Green Bay Packers game or something.
That's crazy.
And James Mason, not James Mason. Robert Shaw was in that movie. He was great.
The other thing, and I know that's younger Bruce Dern, but another one that was just amazing to just show you who the fuck he is if you've never seen him is Nebraska.
Oh yeah, Nebraska,
dude.
Well, he was old at that point.
Yeah,
too.
No,
he was ornery, but he was. It was a great, great role for him.
His character range is phenomenal.
Even in
that.
Hateful Eight,
he
was good in the Hateful Eight.
Yeah, God, dude,
as the Colonel, man.
I'm gonna be. I'll tell you what. When he passes, we're gonna talk about this movie again.
Yeah, we're gonna talk some more about that. There's some older actors out there that they're still kicking, that are doing well, man. I've been seeing a lot of their ages and stuff. Like Gene Hackman's still kicking. Yeah.
I saw that picture for his video for his birthday a couple months back.
Yeah, I mean, he's like 90 something.
Yeah,
it was somebody else. Oh, James Hong, who's like 95, went to a con. I have the video someplace. Went to a con and dressed up fully
like
as Lopan.
Oh, my
and
God.
And stood in front of the crowd and did his whole lines
for
like
God.
This major scene. I'll send you the clip later on.
Amazing.
It blew my mind. I was like, holy shit, James Hong put all the makeup and stuff on.
Welcome, Mr. Burton.
Yeah. It wasn't the old man. It was
that's
the tall guy. It was great. All right, that's badass. One more Lou Gossett Jr. movie, and it's a great one. And I think I'm pretty sure we battled this movie in, way back in the day.
That we did. And on today, I will give you the win.
All right.
Yeah.
Back then, I had to win too. No, you didn't. And at the time in the 80s, what was the year of this? Let me get this right.
God, it got to be like 87, 88.
Yeah. 86.
Oh, wow.
Very close. So 1986 was a big time for fighter jet movies.
Yeah.
So if you're a Lou Gossett fan, you know what I'm talking about right now. We're talking some Iron Eagle, which is very similar to The Rescue that I had mentioned earlier.
I get those confused a lot, actually.
A lot of people get them confused. Because I came out almost the exact same time.
I thought Kevin Dillon was in fucking Iron Eagle.
Yep.
Like,
Iron Eagle was Jason Gedrick, who they killed him off in Iron Eagle 2 in the first 5 seconds of the movie.
Yeah, because likeness issues or something like that.
Yeah, he was in the plane, like the credits just rolled and he's in his fighter jet and they blew him up. I was like, wait a second, dude. Can't do that to him. I said, yes, we can. And we just did. And number two is decent. Hard to find. Hard to find, man. If you can find number two, pick it up on DVD or whatever.
I think I've seen two more than one.
Yeah, at some point I saw them evenly because I think my stepdad loved two and he just watched it, or they just played it a lot on TV.
I think they played two more on TV.
And three was kind of embarrassing, but you still, Lou Gossett came back for all three of them.
I saw three, but I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, it was like, I don't even remember the plot of three.
No, couldn't tell you that.
The second one, it was the two groups that were coming, like the Americans and the Soviets had to come together and work together on some jet plane thing. I don't know what it was. But the first one, man, first one was ingenious. So you got Jason Gedrick. He lives on the Air Force base. He's his father is a pilot that goes over to Iran, I think it is. And he gets shot down. The Iranians kidnap him, bring him back, torture him, tell him, hey, on this date, you are going to be publicly executed.
Yeah.
And it's the guy who plays the main terrorist is awesome. He's played a terrorist in like three different movies. Not the type guy. It's this poor bastard. And he was like the terrorist in one of the Delta Forces. I think it was the second one.
Hmm.
And he's great in it. He's great in this movie too. But so what happens is, so his father is gone. They tell him, and he says, "All right, so when are you going to go get him?" And they were like, "Well, we don't think it's going to happen. We don't have the recon where we need." And they just give him excuses on excuses of, you know, how we don't want to. Diplomatic relations are very tense right now.
Yeah.
That's how they all say that type of shit. Well, he's got a bunch of friends on the base, very similar to The Rescue. The friends were great in this movie. One of my favorite scenes is where they play the Twisted Sister We're Not Gonna Take It song.
They're
collecting all the gear they're gonna need.
Yeah.
Because at some point, so this is the crust
the montage.
Of the movie. The main crust of the movie is that he has to, and he is a good fighter pilot. He's really good. He's not the best, but he's decent enough that, and he, I think he's in the academy, and he flunked because he kind of doesn't follow the rules and type of thing, but he's still really good at it.
He's
they show that scene where he's racing the other guy on the ground with the motorcycle, and he's racing in the air above him. It's really, really fun.
Yeah.
So he realizes, I'm going to have to go get my dad. You know, I have friends that work that have, like his little fat friend with the glasses had access to the photography lab where they could take the images that were coming in from Iran, and he had another friend that could steal uniforms, and another friend, the two girls were in charge of stealing the maps and everything, so they got them all on board. One of his best friend was the kid from Teen Wolf, wasn't it? I think Michael J. Fox's best friend in Teen Wolf was the same kid who played the best friend in this.
Robert Jane?
I think
that's him. Yeah. I definitely recognize him from something else.
Let me see. Real quick. On IMDb.
Yeah. Is that him there?
No, that's his son. No, that's his brother
that
wants to go. But we've seen him in a bunch of stuff. I'm pretty sure that's the kid from just one of the guys.
He was in Tremors. That's why he looks
familiar.
Oh,
yeah. Marvin, you want to make a buck? Tim Thomerson was one of the colonels in this movie. Yeah, the guy who played the enemy guy was David Sochet.
Mm.
But what's his name? No, Jerry Levine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Teen Wolf. It was Teen Wolf.
Yeah, that's
buddy.
Right. No shit, that's Styles.
He was the surfing. He was the guy who was surfing on the top of the thing.
Fucking Styles, man.
Yeah, he's awesome. He was right up there as one of the more likable characters. He was like the Coogan, Kevin Coogan kid in the 80s. He was just that everyman guy that was goofy and funny.
Yeah.
So I loved him in this. And so when Lou Gossett Jr. came in, they realized, well, we need the help of a major pilot here. And at first, it was not even a consideration that Louis Chappie, he played Chappie, the was it Colonel? I don't know.
Colonel Charles Sinclair.
Charles Sinclair, they called him Chappie. So he was friends. He knew his dad. So he knew he could come to him, and he said, this is what my objective is. And he tells him, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're never going to make this. You forget this. You got to let your dad can take care of himself, and the military will make the right decisions type of deal. He's just kind of shooing him off. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I'm going.
That's my dad.
Yeah, that's my dad. Man, there's one moment. This is one of my favorite Lou Gossett Jr. moments as a kid watching this movie. There's one moment where Jason Gedrick disrespects him. Mm-hmm. And Lou Gossett Jr., he not only disrespects him, but he looks away, and Lou Gossett screams, "You look at me when I'm talking to you." He like went right back into that drill sergeant from Officer and a Gentleman, and it scared the shit out of me as a kid how fast he snapped.
Yeah.
And the next like 30 seconds were super tense, and you realized Gedrick never disrespected him again in the movie, too. And they became best friends eventually. Because, like you said, they had the montage where they're all collecting all the stuff.
Right.
And then he's in on it. You know, they're going to go together.
Yeah.
And they
don't they fly like some older planes, too? They're not like F-15s and shit.
Yeah, they're slightly older, but he is. Some of the stuff they're using is pretty top of the line. I'm not sure what they were flying. But the last third of the movie, very similar to like the last third of a lot of these movies we've been talking about today, was just killer, man. Because in the early morning, it's when it all went off right. They got up there in the air together. He's talking to him, and he tells they get into this situation where they first encounter the enemy jets. And one of them clips Chappie. Mm. And Chappie's going down, and he tells him, he says, "Listen to me, kid, that tape I gave you," gives him an audio cassette tape.
That's right, yeah.
Because Gedrick could not stop listening to heavy metal music when he was doing shit, and Chappie kept yelling at him for it. And he could tell Chappie's plane was spiraling out, he might go down. And he's like, "That tape I gave you, you put it in there, and you follow the instructions on that tape."
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he falls out of range, and you hear this explosion, and you think Chappie's dead.
Yeah.
And he comes back at the end.
Spoiler. Surprise.
But he comes back at the very end. So the rest of the movie, it's Jason Gedrick doing the shit he has to say. But he puts that tape in, and he was like, "Well, if you listen to this tape, I didn't make it."
Yeah.
"So this is what you have to do. You got to check your flu. You got to check this." And he talks him through the whole way. So it's great that you lost Louis Gossett, but you still hear his voice and the whole thing.
Angel
and
watching over you.
And it's so exciting once he gets there and he's like, you have this prisoner. I want him at the end of the airfield, or I will destroy two more of your fuel dumps," because he goes there and he already destroys three of them or something like that. And he's like, the guy's pissed. "I will get you, Iron Eagle." Yeah. And it was just great shit where he's just trying to like avoid the enemy in the air and then take everybody out. And he finally, his dad doesn't know it's him. So it's one of those situations where he finally lands the plane and his dad sees him and he runs over to his dad. He's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
Not as good as the rescue, man. The rescue had such an amazing ending when Kevin Dillon finally became face to face with his dad.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a scene because he's wrestling this prison guard. In the rescue, they're held underground, so they're like standing above them.
Yeah.
So he realizes that Kevin Dillon's dad realizes someone's trying to rescue him and wrestle the guard. So Kevin Dillon's dad puts his arm up and chokes him to death and then pulls him over, and he's like face to face with his son.
Yeah.
And it's his dad's eyes when he sees him was such great moment, man. I love it.
So the planes used in Iron Eagle, they are F-16s. So there's one single seat F-16A. Two-seat F-16B, and an F-21C2 KFIRS, simulating the MiG-23 painted with fictional national markings.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if the military was going to let them use their hardware, they probably didn't want them to use pieces of shit.
Yeah.
Show us our good stuff.
Yeah.
Do it and everything. So, yeah, it did come out at the same time as Top Gun, and there was a lot of people that were on one fence that were and the other side was the Iron Eagle fans. So I was always more of an Iron Eagle fan than a Top Gun fan. I didn't see Top Gun in its entirety until I was in my 30s.
Yeah.
And I've seen it since, and it was decent. It's just this one lacks the other one had some sappy. Top Gun had a lot of sappy moments,
yeah.
And there was no love interest in Iron Eagle. The love interest was Jason Gedrick and Lou Gossett Jr., and it was beautiful. I did. Did you eventually see all of Maverick?
I didn't.
Man, such a great movie.
Yeah,
Maverick was great. But to be honest with you, it was a lot more great once you watched the 10-minute making of it and you realized that they did everything in that movie.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, after watching Mission Impossible, you should watch, because very similar to this movie, that last third of that Maverick movie was killer, man.
Killer. Yeah.
And they could accomplish some stuff then that they couldn't do now in the movies. So I thought it was great. But yeah, that's the Lou Gossett mini memorial pod, man. There's plenty of his that we didn't mention. Like we were talking Enemy Mine is a good one. There was a great one with him and Martin Sheen called The Guardian that I always liked. One that me and Justin always were fans of that could have very easily been on this pod is Firewalker.
Hell
with,
yes.
With Chuck Norris. A buddy comedy with Lou Gossett Jr. and Chuck Norris. Come on, guys.
And what's my buddy's name that's the bad guy?
Yeah, the guy
fucking
Sonny
Billy,
Liston.
Man.
Sonny, is it Sonny Liston?
No, he's the, no, that's Sonny. The boxer. It's, yeah, it's Sonny, box. It's not Sonny Chiba.
It's Sonny something.
Sonny in Philadelphia. Sonny Landon, I
Sonny
think
Landon,
his name.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You'll know him from The Predator. He's the guy that he played Billy in The Predator.
He's the guy that they kept a bodyguard around to keep him from fighting the other guys.
That's a good one, man. I love all Lou Gossett Jr.'s movies, man. I'm definitely going to spend the week. I have a week off from work, so I'm about to go up north. Before I go up there, maybe I'll watch a couple other Lou Gossett Jr.'s. Digstown, man. Every time I talk about Digstown, I just want to immediately put it in. You know how that
so
is.
So fucking good.
There's a lot of movies like that I hear Dave talk about, and I'm like, God damn you, now I got to watch that fucking movie tonight.
Yeah.
But it's worth it. It's one of those movies that... And I've more and more lately, I've realized if it's a movie that I find myself watching over and over again throughout the year, I need the Blu-ray for, because I've been pulling out some, like,
Do
I pulled
make
out
a
the
Blu-ray for Digstown. I gotta look that up.
Maybe not. That's a kind of obscure one, but
yeah.
we watched this movie a lot, and Napoleon Dynamite, and I have the crappiest like copy of it. That it's one of those flip discs,
yeah,
and everything. I need a Blu-ray of that.
I think they might have already done it, but they were doing a live presentation of Napoleon Dynamite. Oh. With John Heder and the guy who plays Pedro.
Yeah, they're all around. Even fucking Uncle Rico.
I would have loved to have gone to
that. I love that movie, man. It gets better every time I see it. So yeah, me and my cousin have a special pod going up. Usually we talk horror, and we've got like 11 horror pods up there, but we're going to switch it up this time. We're going to do something interesting since I'm going up there to during WrestleMania. We're going to do a special 10 episodes where we talk about either movies that have either starred or have major cameos of wrestlers in it, man. And it is a fun list of movies to talk about. So if you're a wrestling fan or you just like action movies, because that's chances are that's what these movies are, you're going to want to tune in for that one. So that's going to be exciting. But until then, if you want to hit us up with an email, fastnamefilms@gmail.com. We'll get back to you. Also, our social media, you can send us a like or comment on SoundCloud, or you can jump over to Facebook where you can talk to me and Justin under Fascinated with Films. We can see all the cool photos we shoot. So next coming weeks should be some exciting ones. We're trying to get back onto the more reg, but everyone's just busy as hell. Everyone listening, I'm sure, understands that, because your lives are probably busy as ours too. But until next week, see you.
Now you motivate me.
Do I look that stupid, or have you all been breeding too close to the gene pool again?